Hey, what you're about to listen to is the podcast version of what was a live radio segment on KPFA. Consequently, when you hear us give out a call-in number, you don't want to call it. If you're listening to this as a podcast, it is already too late, and nobody on the other end of that phone number is going to have any useful answers for you. Let's go to the show. We're going to turn, as we do most weeks at this time, to new developments in the world of COVID-19. But apparently, we are having a bit of difficulty getting through to Dr. John Swartzberg. So what I'm going to do right now is open our phone lines, and hopefully we can get your questions queued up and get through to the good doctor shortly. The phone number is 1-800-958-9008. And if we can't get Dr. Swartzberg on, it's going to turn into a bit of an open forum. 1-800-958-9008 for your corona calls. All right, Dr. John Swartzberg is with us. He is clinical professor emeritus of infectious diseases at UC Berkeley School of Public Health. Good morning, Dr. Swartzberg.
Good morning.
I wanted to start with the news. Last week we had discussed top-line statistics that suggested what has shaped up to be a very bad flu season might have peaked. But you also warned that it's not uncommon for there to be two peaks in a flu season. And in the latest release of statistics from the CDC, we are seeing another uptick in the percentage of tests from clinics coming back positive and in the share of clinic visits that are for influenza-like illness. What to make of the statistics we've seen so far?
Well, you're right. We are seeing in the last week an uptick in cases. Not dramatic, but it clearly the trajectory that had been going down over 3 weeks turned last week and went back up. Nationally, it did that. Here in California and in the Bay Area, it's done that. So this is looking like it may be that double hump that you and I talked about previously, Brian. That is, we had a big surge of cases right around the holidays, right after the holidays. And then things started to come down and looked much better, and now they may be going back up again. One of the interesting things in looking at this is that we're seeing an increased percentage, albeit small, but an increased percentage in influenza B. What we've been dealing with previously has been influenza A. That's been the gorilla in the room. And now it seems that influenza B is starting to take over, or not take over, but increase now. It's still less than 10% of all the cases that we're seeing, but it's now starting to go up. So that's significant in that influenza B often is a bigger problem for kids than influenza A. On the other hand, influenza A, particularly the type that's been circulating, tends to be, in general, a more difficult disease to handle than influenza B. So that we may be going into the influenza B season now. That's what we see every year with influenza A, starting off the season, usually peaking right around now, and then influenza B raising its ugly head up and taking us through the end of influenza season, which is really through March.
I realized that I neglected to kind of cover the basics when we discussed influenza last time. In terms of, you know, precautions when you're out and about to avoid taking influenza home with you, what's most effective and what's different, if anything, from the precautions people are already used to taking for COVID?
Right. I was going to say, think COVID. The transmission of this virus, it's a respiratorily transmitted virus. Its transmission is very similar to COVID. It is primarily spread through large and medium-sized droplets. But it certainly, and that takes you to about 6 feet away from somebody, but it certainly can also spread in the air. That is an airborne virus like COVID, and that can spread many, many feet and many, many yards. So if you're in a crowded indoor space right now, it makes sense to put a mask on. If you are traveling, certainly in the airport and certainly on the plane, put a mask on, not just a mask, but a good mask that filters out almost all of the viral particles, N95, KN95, for example. So those are the primary things. Whether or not influenza transmits by you touching an inanimate object and then bringing your fingers to your nose or mouth or eye and inoculating it that way, whether that plays a major role or not, really, we don't have a lot of good science on that. So I think it's prudent to use good hand hygiene like we do with COVID, even though COVID is not primarily transmitted that way. There is one difference with COVID and influenza that's worth pointing out. With COVID, its real strength in terms of its ability to transmit to people is that people are contagious for 24 to even 48 hours before they become symptomatic. And that is really a problem because you think you're well and you think you just go on with your daily activities and yet you're spreading the virus. With influenza, you certainly can be contagious before you become symptomatic, but typically it's maybe 12 hours or so, usually less than a day. But you're most symptomatic when you start, you're most contagious when you start to develop symptoms. So with influenza, it really hits you fast and hard. You know something's going on, and that's when you're highly contagious.
So any friend you run into with a sniffle that says, "Don't worry, I took a COVID test, I'm negative," tell them I don't want what you've got. All right.
I just want to emphasize that that is such an important point you're making. It's like people come and say, "Well, no, it's just a cold," or "I think it's probably allergies," or so on. I think during this season, where we have RSV rising in cases, influenza, as you pointed out, rising in cases, and COVID sort of poking along right now, if you've got respiratory symptoms, it could be any one of those three, or it could be a variety of other respiratory viruses. So just be careful.
All right, we've got a big stockpile of listener questions. We'll be taking calls momentarily at 1-800-958-9008. That's 1-800-958-9008 for your Corona calls. I wanted to start with one from the inbox. This comes from Carolyn in Sonoma County, who writes, "The USA has now left the World Health Organization, but Governor Newsom has announced California will join WHO's Infectious Disease Surveillance Network on our own. Please comment on how helpful this might be."
Great question. And my answer is, I think it will be very helpful to not just California, but the rest of the United States. The idea that we're not participating with the World Health Organization, much less contributing to it financially, it's insanity. It's just, I don't know a better word to say for this. It's a horrible decision. So it's one of the many reasons I'm very grateful for living in California right now in terms of how we're approaching public health issues, and this is a very big one. California, being the largest state in the United States, is going to contribute good data to the WHO, which will inform everybody. The WHO will be plugging in with California to give us their data. So I think it's all in all just a very smart move by California.
All right, let's go to one from the phone lines. We can start in the periphery of the West Bay. Alex is on the line in San Francisco. Good morning, Alex.
Hi there. I'm calling because I just got better from being sick for like about a week, and I tested. You know, I'm hearing what y'all are saying about masking up regardless of whether or not someone's tested. And I'm wondering, like, how effective are at-home COVID tests at this point? Does it make sense to rely on these tests as opposed to going into like a doctor and get checked out?
Let me ask before we answer you, Alex, what purpose are you testing for? To figure out how much of a threat you are to other people or to figure out what kind of care you need?
I think both, to be honest. I do generally mask in my day-to-day, especially taking public transit and whatnot. And I don't want to pass anything on to family or friends, especially because, like, it's just, I don't know. I've got so many friends and family who have been exposed to various things that have left them immunocompromised, and I'm trying to protect my community the best that I can.
Yeah, good on you. Dr. Swartzberg, how effective are the home tests for identifying whether a set of symptoms is COVID?
Yeah, they're very effective in terms of if the test is positive. So you can assume that if the test is positive, you've got COVID. There are very few what we call false positive tests for that. Unfortunately, the flip side of this, and I'm talking about the home tests that you bring home, the antigen tests. The flip side is that there are a lot of false negatives. So if you have a negative test, it does not mean that what you're experiencing is something besides COVID. You could very well have COVID and have a negative test. And that's been a real Achilles heel of these tests, that there are a lot of false negatives. So if it's positive, it's good. You've got, well, it's positive, it's bad. You've got COVID. On the other hand, if it's negative, you still have to think that this still could be COVID. So the current recommendation, generally speaking, is to test yourself, assume you're still contagious with something, maybe it's still COVID, and test yourself in 24 to 48 hours. And if that's negative, you've reduced, although not ruled out, the possibility of it being COVID. So test yourself when you first develop symptoms, and then wait 24 to 48 hours. In that period of time, continue with precautions. And if you're negative at 48 hours and you're getting much better, it's unlikely to be COVID, but still could be. Let me add one last thing quickly, and that is that there are better tests in terms of the false negative problem. Those are called PCR tests, and these are tests that are very sensitive. And you can get this over the counter, but it's probably best to go to an urgent care or your doctor's office to get that PCR test. And if that's negative and you're symptomatic, it's probably that because you're infected with something else besides COVID. So it doesn't have as many false negative tests.
I think to the question of protecting other people, though, the answer is simpler than what is the likelihood of a false negative or a false positive on a home test. If you have symptoms, and even if a test result is suggesting it's not COVID, if you have medically vulnerable people in your life, you also don't want to give them influenza A or influenza B or RSV or whatever else is causing your symptoms. So the basic precautions of staying away from people who are vulnerable and masking when you can't avoid being around other people kind of stay in effect regardless of the test result, right, Dr. Swartzberg?
Such an important point, Brian. You said it perfectly.
All right. Let's go to another from the inbox, and this is apropos of our discussion about the resurgence of measles in the United States last week. Kendall, no city mentioned, writes, I'm in my 70s and had a bad case of measles when I was a kid. I was told that once someone's had it, they never get it again. Do people like me need to be vaccinated for it now? And then in parenthesis, I've never been vaccinated for measles before.
Right, Kendall, you are pretty. You can be pretty sure you won't get measles again. When I say pretty sure, if you've had the vaccines, the two vaccines with a child, for example, or if you've had measles as you've had, the chances of getting measles again are exquisitely small, well less than 3%. So I think you can assume that you are immune, and you can assume, and you don't need to get revaccinated right now or at any time, really. The measles vaccine is very durable, which is great. I wish many of our other vaccines, like COVID and influenza, were durable like this. So you and once you've had measles, you have very good immunity for should have very good immunity for the rest of your life.
All right, 1-800-958-9008 to put a question to Dr. Swartzberg. Next on the line, we have Pat in San Francisco. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Brian. And hello, Doc. Brian, This is unfortunate. I only wanted to ask you about a book that I was going to get from pledging to your program about back in early December, and I wondered when it's going to come. That's all. It was a book called Liar, illustrated book.
I'm sorry, the book doesn't ring a bell. I don't think it's a book we offered in this program, but if you call KPFA switchboard during business hours, someone can look up your donation record for you, Pat. It's 1-800.
Okay.
It's 510-848, I believe, 5732. But I don't trust my memory on that, Pat. You can look it up. Sorry about that. 1-800-958-9008 for your corona calls. That's 1-800-958-9008. Let's go to the Central Valley, where John is on the line in Fresno. Good morning, John.
Good morning, and I'm really calling to thank Dr. Schwartzberg for his advice about immunizations and boosters and shots. But I'm in a group, most of them older, and you've touched on part of this earlier this morning, but we do review the rules about self-testing, because as far as I know, everybody's been sick, and it's been a long fall for everybody, and as nobody I know has trusted the COVID testing to eliminate that. I tried to get some tests and found it hard when I was sick, so I didn't go out looking for them, but the availability is down. And so if you get yourself to the drugstore, what kind should you have on stock, and when should you start testing? With the first symptoms? I'm thinking of COVID testing.
Yeah.
Well, what my wife and I do is we have the COVID antigen tests at home. So those are the standard tests that we've had before. And we start with those. And if, for example, I was really sick, and it could be COVID, it could be influenza, it could be RSV, but I'm feeling really miserable, I would probably call my physician and get that PCR test to really find out what I have. Right now, doctors have available to them, and some of these are available over the counter, but mainly urgent care places, ERs and doctor's offices, they have this PCR test available, not just for COVID, but it can pick up RSV and it can pick up influenza A and influenza B. And the reason why I'm saying that is that both you and I, John, are older, and any one of these infections is going to be more severe in older people than it is in younger people. And there are medications to take for both influenza and COVID, not specifically for RSV, but for influenza and COVID. And they work best if you take them as quickly as possible after you become ill. So if you wake up and you think, I have a cold and it's not too bad and so on, start with that over-the-counter antigen test. That's what I'm doing. And if you wake up and you feel like you've been hit by a Mack truck and you're really feeling terrible, start with the over-the-counter test that you have at home. If that's negative for COVID, I would perhaps go in and get a better test, that either the PCR just for COVID, or that what's called a multiplex test, where it tests for just for COVID, influenza, A and B, and RSV.
I'll just jump onto that if I could. You know, my wife and I stockpile the home rapid antigen tests as well. You know, they're cheap. For a while, you could get them shipped to you free through the U.S. Post Service. Last time I checked, my healthcare provider, Kaiser, also made a certain number free available per month to its members. I've used them two ways. Last time I got COVID, test came up positive. That's very dispositive. It's very unlikely to be a false positive. That was enough for my doctor to write a prescription for Paxlovid, and I was able to start it quickly and get better quickly, which was great. The other is when I'm feeling better, I start taking the tests to see if it's safe for me to be around other people because I want to be more vigilant than just the 5-day waiting period that was recommended by the CDC, and have often found enough evidence to trigger a positive test of viral remains in my nose after that 5-day period. So the protocol I use with the rapid tests is I wait for 2 negative tests 48 hours apart to largely rule out the possibility that I'm getting a rebound case, that it could expose other people to infection. Those are, I think, 2 pretty good use cases for a test that's like cheap and convenient to keep at home for when you need it. Dr. Swartzberg, any other use cases you can think of for those home rapid tests?
No. And I want to emphasize that what you said is completely consistent with what I think as well. So thank you for saying that.
All right, let's go to one more caller. We've got just a couple minutes. Sarah in Oakland, good morning.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on the air, Sarah.
Okay. I was listening when he was talking about being contagious before there are any symptoms. I had a cold last week. I stayed in bed, felt better. I still have some congestion, occasional coughing. If I'm around people, are they protected if I wear a mask? If I have any.
The answer, yeah, thank you. If you didn't have COVID influenza, the next most likely culprit for your cold is what are called rhinoviruses. And they're spread by droplets, larger droplets, so they're not spread in a great distance. You can get about 6 feet. They're also spread on inanimate objects that you would touch and then bring to their nose or mouth or eye and inoculate themselves. So those rhinoviruses, which are the most common virus to cause the common cold, are spread that way. So the other thing about rhinoviruses is that adults are usually contagious for maybe 5 days, typically maybe up to 7 days. It's unlikely to be longer than that. We don't have a good test for that that's routinely used. So your strategy of wearing a mask afterwards is definitely going to protect other people, but you have to add to that strategy with rhinoviruses really good hand hygiene, washing your hands well, and if you don't have access to water and soap, then using the alcohol hand sanitizers that do work and kill the rhinovirus.
All right.
Thank you.
Good luck, Sarah. Glad to hear you're feeling better. Dr. Swartzberg, thank you for sending another Monday morning with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, that does it for this week's edition of Corona Calls. If you want to send in a question for next week's, you can email coronacalls@kpfa.org. Or tune in live to Call In Live. Usually we air Monday mornings right after 7:30 news headlines on KPFA 94.1 FM in the Bay Area or kpfa.org anywhere in the world. We put a little bit of extra work into repackaging this live segment as a podcast because it feels like the information is useful to a lot of people. We ought to make it accessible through as many channels as possible. If you can help us get the word out by rating and reviewing it in whatever app you're using to listen. And if you want to pitch in some cash, we wouldn't say no. We always take donations at kpfa.org. I appreciate it if you mentioned Corona Calls when you make your pledge. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiekert. I hope you have a great week. Stay well. We'll talk to you next time.